and welcome to the Conversations with Authors podcast. I'm your host, Alison Thompson, aka The Proof Fairy. Every week in this podcast, I talk to an author about what inspired them to start writing and what tips they would give other aspiring authors. Guest is Roger Edwards. Roger is a marketing consultant and his first book was published during the 2020 pandemic. The curiously named Cats, Mats and Marketing Plans is a guide to keeping your marketing strategy simple. So hello Roger, it's lovely to talk to you today.
Hi, Alison. Thanks so much for having me on the show. Great to be here.
You're very welcome. So tell me about your book.
Well, my book has rather an intriguing title, or rather, I hope it's quite an intriguing title. It's called Cats, Mats and Marketing Plans. And effectively, it is a book about how to write a marketing plan, how to put together a simple marketing strategy. And when I was doing research around book titles, you know, there was two schools of thought. The first school of thought was it had to say what it was. It had to be something like Marketing for Dummies or How to Put Together a Simple Marketing Plan or A Marketing Plan Done Simply. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, well, in fairness, this book isn't going to appear in bookshops unless I'm extremely lucky. It's going to be bought by people online. So it's likely that they're going to have found it because I'd been promoting it or word of mouth. So I wanted to go for the quirkier book title. And I do quite a lot of public speaking, and one of my inspirations for the book is a talk that I do, which is affectionately known as the Cat on the Mat speech. And I have decided to reflect that in the title of the book. So Cats, Mats and Marketing Plans was an homage to a speech that I've been giving for many years, but also allowed me to get cats into the title and into the imagery because I love cats as well.
It's a really good tie-in. And yeah, like you said, it's an unusual title. It's imaginative. It stands out from all the other marketing books, I guess. And it ties in with stuff that you're already doing. I love cats too. I also love dogs. And you can probably hear there's a couple barking in the background. They actually get a credit for this podcast in the closing credits. So unless they go completely bonkers, I'm going to let them do what they're doing.
It's unlikely that my cat will make an appearance. She's downstairs fast asleep at the moment. So fingers crossed.
That's a nice life, isn't it?
Absolutely right.
So what inspired you to write the book?
Alison, I've loved writing throughout my entire life. I can trace it way back to an English teacher called Mr. Plowes, who was just an absolute inspiration. He used to come into the class and he used to read us books and then critique the prose and the writing style and that sort of thing. So I was hooked on it from an early age. I grew up in the late 70s, early 80s, when a lot of films like Star Wars were coming out, Battlestar Galactica, that sort of thing. And I developed this interest in writing science fiction. And I was writing science fiction when I was in my early teens and that sort of thing. Even managed to get some of it published in what were known as fanzines at the time. I don't even know whether fanzines exist anymore. But I even had a go at writing a novel at one point. It was a sort of science fiction time travel type thing. I ended up going to university. A lot of the manuscripts that I wrote in my early days, I thought I'd lost. Recently moved house. So I say recently, it was back in 2012, but I actually came across quite a lot of those manuscripts again that I thought that I'd lost. And it was actually quite interesting to go back and read them something like 25 years later and actually thought, this isn't bad. It's obviously written by an immature teenager and possibly could be could benefit from a few years of maturity layered into it. But I've yet to go back to that. But my career has been a marketing-based career. I've done marketing roles inside big corporates. I've been a marketing consultant. I am a marketing consultant now. And I've been a marketing speaker. And I've I've collected loads of stories over the years, and I guess it just felt this was the right time to collect together quite a lot of stories from all of those years of being a marketing bloke and tie them all together in to reflect this subject that's obsessed me for 25 years, and that is of simplicity. A lot of things that happen in the world, inside corporates, outside corporates, is complicated. We make things needlessly complicated. We make language needlessly complicated. We make products and processes needlessly complicated. And I just wanted to write a book about how to keep marketing simple, but use those stories that I gathered together over my career to illustrate what I was talking about. So I guess even though I didn't end up writing a science fiction novel, I was able to write a book with quite a lot of stories in it. So I felt I was getting the best of both worlds there.
I love the cover of your book. It's a really distinctive design, plain white with a very stylized image of a black cat sitting on a fluffy purple rug. So how did that come about?
Well, it's actually quite interesting. I always had an idea in my head as to what I wanted the cover to look like. And I've been very good friends with a graphic designer, a guy called Col Gray, for many years. He runs a company called Pixels Inc. And it had always been in my head that he would be the person who would do the cover. And I gave him a call, and we had a Zoom call like this, because we were already into the first lockdown at the time. And I described to him, this is the sort of thing that I had in my head for the cover. What do you think? And he says, I'll go away and come up with some ideas and some mock-ups. A couple of days later, he came back, and quite honestly, Alison, what he came back with was pretty much, it was there almost straight away. I think the only thing that I changed was that the original font was in complete capitals and I changed it to sentence case. And I think the tail was a little bit deeper and a bit more of a swirl, whereas I wanted it to curl around the base of the cat. So quite honestly, it was such a quick job to do it. I knew I wanted it to be black. I knew I wanted there to be magenta in there. There's a subtle dig at a company, not a dig, a homage to a company I worked for about 20 years ago, which used magenta in its logo. Quite a few of the stories that are in the book relate to my experiences at that brand. So the magenta in the cover was a sort of homage to them. But no, it was fabulous, and that's testament to Cole's skills, because he knew straight away what I had in mind, and he was able to put that forward. And when I saw it, I was thinking, oh my God, that's exactly what I wanted. Absolutely spot on. Whilst I haven't rebranded my own personal company website, it is in my head that, you know, the icon of the cat would actually work in the same environment. So maybe the next stage will be to rebrand my business using the same logo.
So how did you go about the writing process? Are you a planner, or are you a splurger, or somewhere in between?
Probably somewhere in between. I knew the structure, and I'm very much into writing headlines and bullet points. So there was definitely a structure to the book. What I did find, despite, you know, many, many years of being able to write, I did find it quite difficult to actually sit down and start typing. I do get distracted. I haven't got a way of writing. I know some people say they always get up at 6 a.m. or something and do 2 hours before breakfast, or they get up at 2 a.m. and have a cigarette and then do two. I don't have some special technique like that. And at first, I think I made loads of mistakes, which I knew I was making, but I wasn't picking myself up on it. I was typing stuff and then going straight back and starting to edit it, which is not a good way to write, because you just don't make any progress. So I tried to get out of that habit. I tried all sorts of techniques, like one of my friends suggested turn the screen off so you can't see the screen and just start typing. And it doesn't matter if you misspell it or you don't punctuate it properly, just get it in, hammer the keys.
And that's an interesting one. I've not heard that before. Literally type blind, so
yeah,
I mean, in your head, but yeah,
I have to say I quite liked it. It was very, very, very tempting to stop after about 10 minutes and see what I'd typed and it was hard to not do that and then get back into the editing mode. Mm. What I have done since then, Alison, is that I find that works for writing short articles. I do write quite a lot of 600 to 1,000 word articles for publications, and I do find that if I've got an idea, if I turn the screen off and just hammer the keys, then that's a really good way of getting the basic article in, and then turn the screen back on and go and edit it when it's not part of a bigger, you know, narrative like the book was. What ended up working the best for me was actually I ended up dictating it. Most iPhones, and I guess Android phones as well, for a long time have had a very, very intuitive dictation facility. Often people don't even know it's there. There's like a little microphone icon that always appears in the bottom of the keyboard. And if you click that and then start talking, it basically puts your words onto the screen, whether it's in the notes function or Twitter or whatever it is. And over the years, it's become remarkably accurate. You know, it can even understand my Northern English accent, and it will also understand punctuation. So I can say, I walk down the street, full stop, and it will put the full stop in rather than type it out in words. And what I found was that suddenly became the way that I got the first draft of most of the chapters. So I would find myself pacing around the house, dictating it into the phone, or even going down to the promenade and walking along the promenade and with my headphones on and just talking in, getting strange looks from people. But they may have thought I was on the phone or something like that. I suppose in reality, that's probably not dissimilar to the blind typing. It's just that it was coming out in words straight from my mouth. But I found that A, allowed me to get a lot of words down on screen, on paper, and it was my voice as well. It was coming onto the screen as I would say it. And in reality, because my whole idea of simplicity is to avoid the complexity of pompous language and the complexity of passive language and all of that stuff that you get from corporates, it actually worked to my favour, because one of the lessons of the book is, you know, talk like your customer. Mm. And or talk like you would speak. You know, you go into a pub and you say to somebody, I'll buy us a couple of pints. You don't say a couple of pints of fermented hops served in a cylindrical vessel of fused silicon will be acquired by me to be imbibed by us. You know, you talk in your own voice. And that's when I realised, actually, this is definitely the right way to write it, or to dictate it, because it will end up on paper as if I had actually spoken the words. So it fitted the style that I wanted.
Yeah, it's a technique that I recommend to people a lot, actually. I think there's something about having a piece of paper in front of you or a keyboard in front of you that your brain slips into, oh, I'm writing, so I've got to be really proper and formal in how I say things. And people do lose their voice, and it becomes an essay, a school essay, rather than their recollections, their knowledge, their story. So, yeah, when you're speaking it, when you're dictating it, it is 100% your voice, your language, your style, and then you can tidy it up if it needs tidying up. But it's much easier to tidy it up that way than to have something very formal that you then try to kind of change back to your voice, I think.
And I think that it's one of the things that I teach my own clients, because I think a lot of what the reasons why corporates use such bloated language is because people write in that sort of environment. You know, they're staring at a screen, they've got colleagues and manager, well, at least when we're not in a pandemic, and that it just makes them feel as if they've got to write in a professional way, and I'm using fingers for air quotes there. And that means that they end up putting big words and big sentences and big paragraphs and bloated language on the screen instead of talking in their own voice. So I think, whether you're writing a book, whether you're writing a 600 word article, or even if you're writing an email, you know, dictate it and it'll end up being in your own voice. And that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's most clearly demonstrated by your own cat on the mat example in the book, which I won't spoil, but anyone who wants to know, go and buy the book, read the book, because that's just, that just shows in over the space of what 5 pages, I think. Just what corporate speak does to something, that you can take a very simple concept and you just completely cloud it with complexity until nobody knows what you're talking about. And it's very easy to do that when you're writing a book. You just make everything too complex, too formal, and it's not you and it doesn't say what you want to say.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And I think that one of the lessons that I've learned over the years is that language is often a proxy for everything else that a business does. So if they're using horribly complicated language, it's pretty guaranteed that their product will be complicated and their customer service process will be complicated and annoying. Whereas if you engage with a company which uses simple language, you're probably okay because you'll see that reflected in everything that they do.
I mean, from my own experience, I started my business offering proofreading because I came across a business website for a very high quality product that had dozens of spelling mistakes on their website. And I thought, hang on a minute, if they can't be bothered to check the detail on here, what sort of service am I going to get if I spend money with them? So it's the same kind of thing, isn't it? Your business puts out tends to be your business ethos and your way of working. So you want it to all match up. You want it to align.
Yeah, definitely.
So I proofread and edited the book and we published it through Amazon's KDP print process, print on demand. Why did you choose to go that way of publishing?
I spoke to quite a few people who'd already published books, and some of whom had gone the traditional route and sought out a traditional publishing house. I just decided that, A, I just didn't think that, because there are so many marketing books out there, I just didn't think that, even though I thought that I had a strong idea, I just didn't think a publishing house would bite. Secondly, though, quite a lot of people who have gone with traditional publishers had told me, you know, there's a false perception that these publishing houses will spend a lot of money on marketing your book and therefore it will almost certainly be a success. I was disabused of that straight away. You know, they're not going to spend very much, if anything, on the marketing of the book. You're still going to have to do all of that yourself, and they'll still take a fairly sizable, hefty percentage of the royalties. So yeah, when I weighed that up against the fact that I'm still going to have to market it myself, and then I looked at the options of self-publishing and saw how much extra I could earn from the royalties by doing it through somebody like Amazon, then I thought, actually, why not? I'll do it as a self-published thing, because I think that's the best way to do it for me. Now, I was never, ever, ever under any illusion that this was going to be a multi-million bestseller. It is, in fact, a very niche book, another marketing book. As I say, there are loads. Hopefully it stands out a bit with the title, and the word of mouth will help. Mm-hmm. But it's still I mainly wrote it as a sort of, like a thick calling card, if you like, to help me promote my business as a speaker. And one of the things that if we ever get back to doing proper conferences, you know, and people ask me to go and speak, one option will be to say, you know, if you want to pay me a fee, or you can't pay me the maximum fee that I would like, but you can buy 50 books as well for your delegates. That was really the reasoning behind it. So I think that the publishing on demand, the print on demand route, just suited exactly what my goals for the book were.
Yeah. And I mean, you're a marketing expert, so who better to be able to market your book than you, I guess?
Well, that's right. I mean, let's face it, it's not easy, as you know. I mean, you know, the sales of the book have been fine. They're exactly what I expected. And I haven't sold multi-million copies, as you would expect. But it's been within the goals that I've set for myself. But you still have to email people. You still have to be on social media. You still have to promote it. I mean, I've even advertised it using Facebook ads and that sort of thing. You know, you can't go into it with nothing and expect it to sell to anything other than your close network. I know that it's starting to work because people are in other countries are buying it, which is good. And obviously Amazon tells you where people are buying it. But, you know, once you realise that you've got to go into the promotional mode, whether you've got a publisher or not, unless you're Stephen King, you've got to do it yourself. And once you make that decision, I think the self-publishing route is the obvious choice.
Yeah, I mean, one of the advantages for me is that you can see your sales figures in real time. Whereas, I mean, my first book, I self-published originally, and I would do something on Facebook, or I'd do a blog post, or I'd be at an event, and I could see how that affected sales. It's now with a traditional publisher, and I get a check for about £100 every 6 months, and it says we've sold, you know, this number of books over the 6 months. Well, that's not very helpful for me in terms of marketing, because I have no idea, you know, how anything I do affects sales. So at least, you know, have you found that being able to have that access to sales figures has been helpful in terms of marketing?
It is. I do sometimes wonder, because sometimes there are people who have told me they've bought the book, and they've even sent me photographs of themselves, like a selfie pointing to it. But I can't marry up the actual sales with the date. Now, right at the start, you know, there was obviously quite a flurry of sales, and then it sort of settled down. But I don't know whether how much of a lag there is on the Amazon website or not. I think the Kindle sales are easier to track because they seem to go up on the website more or less as soon as they get sold. They say that they put the printed copies up the day that they dispatch the printed copy. I'm not sure whether it's genuinely the same day or whether there's a lag. But yes, I think that ultimately it's good to be able to get access to what's happening.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, there's a bit of a spike in America here. So maybe I should, you know, talk to some of my friends in America and do a bit more promotion there.
The other thing, I don't know if you found that you had an initial flurry and then the sort of trickle and then it's picked up. Once it gets into the Amazon system, it starts showing up, doesn't it? In people who bought this also bought this. And then I think it can sometimes take on a bit of a life of its own once you start getting the reviews and the sales.
Yeah, and obviously reviews is important on Amazon. They like you to get reviews, and obviously you ask people to put reviews up. And let's face it, it can be quite hard, even from people that you know, to ask them to spend the time to write a review. You know, it's not something that can be done in 10 seconds, unless, of course, it's quite literally a great book, buy it or something like that. But if you want somebody to craft a few paragraphs, you've got to let them do it at their own time. So I've built up some, you know, really quite, you know, reviews that I'm really pleased about, and I've never put words into anybody's mouths, and I've been very pleased with some of the feedback that I've got back. But yeah, there seem to be flurries of sales, and then it'll drop off a bit, and then there's another flurry. So there's obviously algorithms at play in the background, which we don't quite understand. But
it gets a bit of a push somewhere. And
that's right. And then, of course, you also have the electronic version of the book, the Kindle version of the book's also part of I can't remember the name of it now. It's like almost like an online library. And you get a royalty per number of pages that people read. And that's a bit bizarre, but actually that accounts for quite an interesting part of the royalty. So, again, it's worth just looking at, quite a lot of people somewhere in America all of a sudden read this particular book.
Yeah, it's through the Kindle Unlimited program. Where people can borrow an unlimited number of books and read them, and yeah, like you said, you get paid per page. So even if someone doesn't read the whole book, you do get probably fractions of pennies, I would imagine.
Fractions of pennies. But every little helps, to quote every a marketing helps, slogan.
but yeah, I mean, the more people, again, the more people who borrow it that way, the more it gets in, the higher it gets in Amazon's kind of algorithm, and the more it's shown to people, and the more sales you could make as a result. So it's all beyond me, but very clever. So have you learned anything about yourself through writing and publishing the book?
I've always had a set of guiding principles that I've always worked to, whether I've been working in corporate or whether I've been working as a consultant on my own. But those principles have never been written down. And I guess that now that I've written a book about what I do, it almost doubles up as your manifesto. So I genuinely can't break any of the rules that I've effectively run my career by, because it's now in print. in that book.
It's so there if in I black say and white. To,
it is absolutely there. So, yeah. You know, there'll have been times in the past, undoubtedly, where I've broken my own rules. I've written something that's a bit too complicated. I've used passive language, even though I have been on a career-long crusade to stamp it out. Whereas now, you know, somebody can literally come in with the book and say, "Oi, you said this in your book, but you're not doing it in practice." And I don't really want that to happen. So I guess that it's just reaffirmed, but actually allowed me to publish, you know, I guess what makes me tick from a business point of view.
And like you said, in terms of a calling card, a thick calling card for your business, yeah, that's perfect, isn't it? Because it tells people who you are and what you do.
Exactly.
Roger, I know you you are a speaker anyway, and I know your book came out during lockdown, so not during the best of times. But has anything happened as a result of you publishing the book, or do you anticipate sort of anything happening in terms of doing podcasts or increasing your speaking or sort of any other exciting developments as a result of the book?
The original idea was to publish the book last May. Because in the first part of 2020, I had quite a lot of engagements already in the diary, speaking gigs at conferences, strategy workshops at corporates. And if, as you would expect, everything got cancelled within a week. Mm-hmm. So my initial response to that was, well, I'm going to delay publication of the book. And as you know, we stopped and rescheduled it for October, November. Yeah. And of course, I thought that it would all be over with by then. Of course, everybody probably
didn't
did.
We all?
And in reality, we weren't any way further forward when we went into the second lockdown. But I decided, you know what? I'm not delaying again. Let's just get it out there. And in fairness, there aren't as many speaking gigs around at the moment, certainly not at live events. There's plenty of online stuff. And the book has definitely opened up conversations, A, for online virtual events. I've been on a lot more podcasts as a result of writing the book, this one included, obviously. and I've had people approach me for consultancy work. So it is doing what it was designed to do. I guess that because we're not totally open, it's not fulfilling its main role, which was to be part of the package that you would get if I was to turn up live at your event. I'm on stage, and there's also a book on everybody's desk or on everybody's table. So what I'm hoping is that this is the final lockdown and that we will get back to some sort of normality. And when that normality does come, then the book will effectively do what it was designed to do and be that calling card.
Yeah, we can but hope. Yes, it has to be, doesn't it? We have to get back to normality sometime soon. So what tips would you give other people who are either thinking of writing a book or are in the middle of the process?
I guess this is corny and cliched, but I would just do it. Get on with it and do it. I did procrastinate for a long time, Alison. You know, I'll do the book next year, but I've got this big project to do now. And, you know, I haven't got a writing process. I haven't got the structure. And these are just excuses. These are just excuses. If the words are in your head, find a way of getting them onto a screen or onto some paper, whether that's doing it like I did and dictating it, whether you can type and you're good with an old-fashioned typewriter, you know, with proper paper, or if you want to do the blind typing on a dark screen, just find a way of starting, getting excited and getting into that momentum. And all of a sudden, if you're like me, once you find the way of getting the words out, it just absolutely, it becomes like a tidal wave of words. They just all come out. Because if you know what you want to say in your head, you might even have it planned out in your head. It's just that trigger that gets it moving. Mm-hmm. And it's quite often the fact that we procrastinate so much, we don't just get started. And I think that if you get started, it just goes after that.
Just do it. Just get on and do it.
JFDI.
JFDI, just, yeah. No, that's brilliant. Yeah, there's a lot of fear, I think, holding people back. And we talked before about you know, about it needing to be very formal and professional and proper. And I think that holds people back. So yeah, like you said, as soon as you start writing, it's like you knock the wall down and it just carries on. So yeah, JFDI. Yeah. Brilliant. So what's next for you? Do you have any more books in you? Are we likely to see any of those science fiction novels?
That's a very good that's a very good question. I wouldn't rule it out. I as I said, when I rediscovered some of those manuscripts, I was actually quite impressed with the actual story. I wasn't impressed by the actual style of writing. As I say, you could tell it was written by an immature teenager. Having said that, maybe it would appeal to immature teenagers. I don't know, if I just left it in that style. That's a possibility. I don't know. There's probably a second marketing book, because the first one was absolutely based upon a speech which was about the cat sitting on the mat. Also have another conference speech, which is also quite popular, which features a story about a character called John the Wine Man. Now, I can see an equivalent book cover with a wine man with a wine bottle or something, similar colour, magenta, because it's a red wine or something like that. Mm-hmm. So that's a possibility. That's a possibility. I am interested in the science fiction side of things, though. So you never know. We'll see. If Cats, Mats and Marketing Plans works and the pandemic gets finished with and I start to get out to a few more gigs, then maybe it'll sidetrack me back down the business book. But if we, you know, heaven forbid we get locked down for even more, maybe to do something different, I'll revisit the science fiction.
It sounds like it's definitely a case of watch this space for that then.
Yeah.
That would be a very interesting departure. Now, thank you. It's been absolutely lovely talking to you today. And yeah, I wish you all the best with the book. And when the world reopens again, you know, I really hope that it does get you out there and gets you seen on the conference scene. And good luck with whatever else comes. So thank you very much for talking to me.
No problem, Alison. And thank you for the part you played in the production of the book as well.
You're very welcome. Thank you to Roger Edwards for being on the podcast today. You can find out more about Roger on his website, www.rogeredwards.co.uk, and his book, Cats, Mats and Marketing Plans, is also available on Amazon. This has been a Proof Fairy production. You can find out more about the Proof Fairy and the services I offer authors on my website, www.theprooffairy.com. If you like this podcast, then it would be great if you could subscribe, share it, rate it, or even leave me a review. And I'll be back next week with another inspiring interview with another amazing author. Bye for now.